Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, back for the third time. Well, many more than that because several live shows. Krista West from Avlia Folk Embroidery. Krista, welcome.
Thanks so much.
All right. I was all wound up here in a recent Wednesday night show because you have a new book, Everyday Folk, right here, Everyday Folk, 175 folk embroidery designs for the home inspired by traditional textiles. That's not this book. This book is so much more than a bunch of designs that you can stitch. This is so much more. And so we're going to talk about this book because I think I described it on the live show the other day. This is a tool. This is not a project book. This is a tool that you need to have because it can do so much for you. And yeah, we're promoting this book, but you got to have this book, folks. So Krista, you crank out designs like a machine and to the point where there's no way to keep up. And then you write a book and you put 14 designs in there, but I mean, you just keep cranking them out. So why do you set aside time to write a book? What is?
Oh gosh, the story. This is actually a really funny story. So I'm a really active person. It's kind of funny because like I'm a stitcher, but like I stitch because I can't sit still. I've never really, since I was a kid, been able to sit still very well. And so I'm always stitching or I'm always doing something. And most of the time, like during the days, like I'm in the workshop and I'm moving stuff around and I'm making kits or I'm like unpacking orders or like all the things. But last year, it'd be a year ago, I was bicycling to the gym and I was trying to go through a yellow light on my bike and I hit my pedal too hard and I injured my foot pretty significantly. But because I've like worked on my feet for almost 30 years and I'm kind of tough old bird, they didn't diagnose it for over a month. So I went and saw the doctor. They're like, oh, your pain scale isn't very high, so you're fine. It's just a little, you know, thing, no biggie. And so I went around and walked on my broken foot for another month. And after a month, I was like, I really think something's wrong. And I went back to the doctor. They're like, oh yeah, you have a stress fracture in your foot. You now have to be off of your foot for 8 weeks. And I went home and just cried because I was like, what am I going to do? I mean, they put me in a walking boot. My studio is in the basement of my 1923 home, and it's a big space. It's about 1,400 square feet all told. But I have to get down it, like down the stairs. I couldn't get down the stairs, and I was so frustrated, and I was just getting in that super frustrated, mad place. I was honestly just angry at the whole situation, and I couldn't go anywhere, and I couldn't do anything, and I had to be wearing those, although if you've ever worn one of those clunky old walking boots, oh, they're just murder. You feel like you're walking around with a ball and chain. Like, they're horrible. Yes. They're just horrible. And then they throw off your gait, so your hip hurts on the other side, and it's just a gong show. And so there I am, and I'm like, and at this point, I'm like 72 hours into the experience, and I'm melting down. And I thought, okay, I have to have a big project. I have to have something that is so all-consuming that I literally just can ignore this walking boot and where I'm at right now. So I thought, oh, you know, maybe now is the time to actually work on a book. I thought about it for a long time. Partly because my experience, I have a huge craft book and research book library myself, and I'm really picky about like what goes into that library. Something's really got to be good to make the cut to take up the space on my bookshelf. And you know, I've had multiple purges over the years, so I'm old enough that I've seen which books actually go into the Goodwill bin and which ones like, oh nope, that's got to stay on the shelf, you know, because it really earns its place there. And that was what I wanted to put in a book on folk embroidery, because I feel like even this year, really since I started working on the book, I'm really starting to understand folk embroidery as its own category and not just cross stitch. I really wanted to break out of that cross stitch mold because folk embroidery employs many techniques, including cross stitch, but also back stitch, outline stitch. There are even fill stitches. I'm headed to Greece in a few weeks, and that's actually on my docket, is to actually start learning the fill stitches, needle darning. There's this whole world of folk embroidery that is not limited to cross stitch. But I wanted to kind of do something that would open the door to kind of the world of folk embroidery. But I honestly thought, okay, it's been almost like 30 years since any book on folk embroidery has been published. Pretty much all you can get these days is like an old Dover Publications kind of reprint of like a bunch of grainy patterns in black and white, which is great. Like that preserves the patterns, and I love Dover Publications stuff. But in terms of being inspiring or really kind of moving the craft forward, introducing it to a new audience, inspiring both beginning and experienced stitchers, those books don't do that. And so they're more sort of like resources for people who are then going to go do other stuff with them. But I wanted something that was, I kind of figured we were going to get one shot at this. We were going to get one shot at a folk embroidery book, and like maybe it would be great and I'd be able to do more books. But I thought it's probably more likely that I'll get to do one book on this. And so I wanted that book to be as complete as possible. So I wanted it to have like the pretty projects for people who are like, don't give me all the information. I do not want to know the math. I just want to make a pretty project.
Yeah.
But then I also like, I've had books like that, but typically for me, the books that I've had that are just the project-y books, they don't make the purge, you know, because there's not enough like raw data and raw information in there for them to continue living on my bookshelf. The books that live on my bookshelf long-term are ones that also have reference information. They either have calculations. I still have Alice Starmore's Knitting in the Fair Isles book on my shelf because it's such a valuable book on knitting patterns and calculations and things like that. I have a number of like reference works like that because I dip into them from time to time. And I wanted that kind of information in the book. And it was really only over the last couple of years that I'd really come to realize that my background is in professional tailoring. And when you're doing professional custom tailoring, you do a lot of what are called op notes or operations notes. And they're basically sketches and instructions explaining to a seamstress, a sewing subcontractor, exactly how you want something made, like down to an eighth of an inch.
Yeah.
And I had to do those professionally. So writing instructions on how to make a, you know, an envelope style cushion back, okay, that was a piece of cake for me. That wasn't hard for me. I'd done it professionally for decades.
Yeah.
And I only had started to realize that, wait, there's a lot of, because don't get me wrong, there is lots of like wonderful, beautiful finishing out there. I'm thinking like, I am forgetting her first name. Hands-On Design. Cheryl? Yeah. Is that right? Haberman no. at Hands-On Design. No, I have it wrong.
Kathy.
Thank you. Kathy, like her little finishing projects are beautiful with their little hand-sewn cords and like all those wonderful little finishings are fantastic. But that is like a whole nother skill beyond doing the cross stitch. And I felt like there was room for people to have like, so you want a cushion? Here's how you make a really plain Jane, stitch it by hand cushion. So you can get your embroidery on display, start living with it, free it from its frame, and really start engaging with that embroidery. I'm hoping that people would use this book and learn these basic skills and use it as a stepping stone, you know, to go learn more complex techniques.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that was my vision.
Yeah. But that's the thing is if any person just picks up and leafs through the book, you know, they're going to get a kind of a general impression that this is a project book.
Uh-huh.
But when you stop and go through it in detail, you discover that at least in my view, projects are almost secondary to what this book offers.
Yeah, because that was my goal. That was absolutely my goal. Projects are there basically for me. Projects, I mean, in these kind of books now, they're always put at the front of the book. But for me, the essential projects, it's like, okay, here's just a small selection of what you can do in this world. You know, right. here's an idea for a table runner. Here's some cushion covers. Here's a wall hanging. Here's different things you can do. But for me, yeah, I agree with you, Gary. The real meat of the book, if you are really into stitching, is the design worksheet with all the math calculations. I worked so hard over that. And the design library.
Yeah.
You know, just it's right. 40 pages of charts that come from all different sources. Some of those come from old vintage needlework booklets. Some come from photos friends have sent me. Some are from vintage textiles of my own collection, and they range all over. Some are Latvian, Romanian, Greek. That's the other thing, too, is I didn't want to get in the weeds of like, well, where does this originate in folk embroidery?
Right.
Because that gets very tricky in folk embroidery. Like the oak leaf drawstring bag, you can find that motif in Ukrainian embroidery and in Greek embroidery, going back like hundreds of years. So like who had it first, who actually owns it? You can't really ask that question in folk embroidery.
Right.
It's too much of a shared world. And so I kind of wanted to do, I wanted to look at the designs from the point of view of let's look at their structure and let's not get too bogged down about where they came from or how they've been used like in their very final cultural iterations. Let's break them down and look at the elements. And I loved, my publisher had the idea of coming up with the little symbols. So I took all my designs and I divided them into six categories, like perimeter border, centered band. That's like a big border that goes down the center of something. All over designs. Like that's a really typical Greek thing. These all over designs that they make these gorgeous table runners out of. And then, little single motifs, little tiny borders, things like that. So I put them in those categories, but then the publisher, the graphic designer, had the great idea to add these little symbols so that next to each one, like you can see the symbol of kind of overall, what's the structure? What is this? What kind of structure does this design want to be?
Yeah.
And I think that's, I mean, that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to kind of break it down into these elements. So for me, yeah, the essential projects are showing, okay, here's this chart and colorway and design and finishing. And this is kind of what I put together for this project. But it really should just be kind of a springboard, you know, for people going, oh, I love the Brindisi Diamonds table mat, but, you know, those aren't my colors. I'm going to go back to the design library all over section. I'm going to find one that I like even better with a color or motif that I like better. Then I'm going to make my own table mat design and then I'm going to hem it or I'm going to turn it into a cushion or whatever you're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I really liked those little symbols because then that gives you the idea, like if you oh, I want a little border around something, then you go mm-hmm. find that little symbol in the book and you say, oh, here's a really nice, small, tiny border. Yeah, you can see it maybe visually, but sometimes you don't know. Maybe it's bigger than you think it is when you start exactly. stitching. And so those little symbols were great. Or just a motif or an oval, it'll make a great overall design. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I love that.
And that was important for the publisher and both publisher and myself. It was very important. Oh, my gosh. I had this whole thing like last fall. Was it last fall or this past January? I can't remember. It was like a blur now where all the charts I had formatted one way and I had to go back and reformat them all in a different format by hand, oh, every single one of them.
Oh.
But the reason we did that was so that on every page, the chart size is almost identical. There's a few that were really big that we had to like give them a little bit more. They have to make those charts are a little smaller. But overall, it helps you compare one design to another. Like, okay, this one on this looks like kind of big, but wait, over here, this one looks a little smaller. So it gives you a better idea of what they're going to look like in real life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When I went through the book, you know, after about the third or fourth time, what my mind did was it took the section with the designs and just set that aside in my mind, because you've got the front end that really helps people with the basics.
Uh-huh.
And I Trish Burr, you know, all of her books on thread painting, needle painting, she includes a section not unlike that in every book. As advanced as her work is, she always makes it accessible to everyone. And so I really like that section because
that was huge for me. Huge yeah. for me. We hear from so many people. I mean, I get emails almost every week now of someone who's like, well, I've always wanted to try my hand at this, but like you made it easy. Like now I understand and I know that I can start small. Or we get people who are like, I did this 30 years ago and I want to get back into it and I need a refresher. And like this project was small and it was a perfect refresher. And now I'm ready to tackle something bigger. I think that is so important that we are accessible. I also have people who are older who maybe don't have the eyesight, you know, for the teeny tiny patterns, and they want something that's a little less complex. So I feel like it is so important to be as accessible as possible to as many crafters as possible, because I'm even hoping that this will cross-pollinate into like the knitting world, the needlepoint world. A lot of the design library can easily be adapted for other crafts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And see, that was okay. So having that there then makes the book accessible to all, and it doesn't mm-hmm. then set it into the advanced or the intermediate or beginner categories. It makes it for everyone. And yeah, there's mm-hmm. refresher things in there, 'cause we all think we remember everything, but we don't. Mm-hmm. But then the next section was the finishing, because because you're true to your designs, which is always, they're made and designed to be used, they're pieces to be used, but by giving that detailed section about how to finish, you make it again easy for anyone at any level to finish those pieces and get them on a table or a
Yes.
You know, a bread basket or wherever it is.
Exactly. Yeah, it's right. Funny. I tell my family, okay, you need to put on my tombstone, like, 12,352 people have learned drawn thread hemming, you know? Like, or however many people have, like, watched my videos and stuff. Because, and I do have to say, like, I did the step photos, and I've made huge strides in my own photography skill this last year. So, like, if there's anything in the book that I would change, it's some of the step photos. I know now that I could take those better. But I was super happy with the ones that I got for the drawn thread hemming. They're super good close-ups. I used a nifty 50 lens on those. And I was really happy with how those turned out. Because the drawn thread hemming is, like, that's the one skill that I think if you're going to try anything, try that one. Because it allows you to pretty much take anything you make and turn it into a surface textile. Yeah. It's like, and it's not that hard. And I actually enjoy it. I actually do all the drawn thread hemming of every Avalia piece you've ever seen on the website. I do not let my sample stitchers do the drawn thread hemming. Because I want to go through that whole process and measure it and double check it and iron it and all the things. So I do a lot of drawn thread hemming, and I love it. Like, it's a really fun technique to learn. I'm not tired of it yet.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, I look at your projects, and you can get a chart and thread and cloth, and that overall is not horribly expensive. But then for so many people, they finish a project, and now you've got this massive expense to get it made into a pillow or whatever it is. First, you got to find somebody who can do it. It takes X weeks, maybe a couple of months to get it done. Mm-hmm. And it's this, okay, I have this, but I can't do anything with it because I got to have somebody finish it. And you've
I'm the Ford truck of finishing, whereas like all that other stuff is the Ferrari. But I'm just like your, you know, knockabout town, haul things around Ford truck. Like, I want people to know how to just do a basic envelope cushion back, because you can't. I mean, it's nice to do it with a sewing machine, but you don't have to have a sewing machine to do it. And increasingly, very few people who craft, like, unless they're right into quilting or sewing or things like that. You know, it used to be that, like, if somebody stitched, that, like, they had a sewing machine too, but that's less and less likely. You know, just because you knit or you embroider or you stitch doesn't mean you have a sewing machine. So, like, I want stuff that people can do entirely by hand. Hand and a little tiny iron, one of those, like, little Liso craft irons and a wool felt pad, and you are good to go. Like, because you're right, that finishing is so crazy expensive. People can spend hundreds on that.
Right.
And then it's not usable. It's sitting there waiting to be finished. And if you can take a little time and get it done yourself, wow. Well, it's nice.
And then the thing too, once you've paid that much money, now we're in the too fancy zone. Now it's too fancy to use. You know what I mean? So we're like, too fancy. It's like, okay, we got to put it in a drawer and nobody gets to enjoy it, you know?
Right.
So yeah. Yeah, I'm all about, like, set the bar a little lower on finishing just so that you can get that thing out there and start enjoying it.
Well, exactly. And I think if we did a survey of 400 or 500 people, we would discover that there are just a ton of projects in drawers that got finished and will probably never see the light of day because of the expense and or time in finishing. And those instructions you gave, which you can get similar instructions elsewhere if you hunt them down, but they're all in one spot. that allows people, like you said, you don't have to have a sewing machine, just stuff you have. We all have an iron and an ironing board, for crying out loud. And you can at least finish it and get it so it's usable and get it out on display so people can see that something actually comes out of all this time you have your head bent over a piece of cloth.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mitered cushion, the mitered border is really great. The images on that one, that is great.
I know, right? Isn't it great? I know, I love this one.
Because mitering, you know, is kind of, for those of us who don't do a lot of sewing, mitering can be intimidating. And so you make it very step by step.
It is intimidating to everyone. But I am the queen of the miter because as a professional tailor, making Greek Orthodox church vestments, all of the trim, there's 30 yards of trim that is sewn to every set of vestments. And every time that trim turns a 90 degree angle, it has to have a miter put in. So I have literally sewn thousands and thousands of miters over my career. I've taught people how to do miters. So miters are a thing. And the trick is really the real trick there that most people don't know until I didn't even learn this until I went through my apprenticeship training with another tailor, is that there are several sewing operations that it's very important to not try and take it all in one fell swoop. You want to actually, that miter cushion has 5 seams in it. Or no, I'm sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8. It has 8. And so you sew the one side and then you stop and then you sew the other side and then you stop and then you sew the other side and then you stop. And those starts and stops give you ultimate control over getting that miter to be incredibly precise. And then when you add counted thread fabric to that, where you can pull a thread and have a guide channel, oh my gosh, it's really not hard at all.
I'll have to try it. It's on my to-try list.
Well, and plus it's kind of fun too if you do have a smaller project. I've had a couple people message on Instagram and say, ooh, I'm going to use that technique for that unfinished little thing that's in their project drawer. That is mm-hmm. just a little 6x6 or a little 8x8, something they might have done in a class or as a sampler or something. Well, pop that mitered border on it and you're good to go. It makes it look like so much more embroidery than it really is.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, to me, this is where the book starts to open the door beyond cross stitch. I mean, folk embroidery as a design, but mm-hmm. cross stitch as a technique. But this starts to open the door because other techniques in most instances require or could use similar finishing that somebody could just do at home without having to go find a finisher or mail it or
totally.
It starts to open doors there.
Oh yeah, all of these techniques, if you were doing, you could even work the drawn thread hemming on a really, really fine linen if you were doing surface embroidery or hand embroidery. It's right. a little bit more fussy, but it's the same concept. Yeah.
Right.
And that's where this book for me started to take on some power beyond what we've already talked about. I started to have vision now of a much broader use application, and I think I even described it. It becomes a tool. The book it's not a reference book, it's not a project book, it's a tool that helps you do something with your stitching.
That was totally my aim. That was totally my aim because again, as I've kind of grown along with Avlia, one of the things that I've just come to realize is that kind of old school, simple production assembly line sewing, we don't have very many people here in the United States who know how to do that kind of stuff anymore because of so much of our fashion industry and garment industry being sent offshore.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing my training, it was still you'd know somebody who was a seamstress. I knew a seamstress at Janssen Swimsuits, when they still were in Portland, Oregon, making swimsuits in Portland, Oregon. And, I'd drive out to the Pendleton Woolen Mills and they'd have people there that would be making stuff. But that workforce has really gone away in the United States. And along with it is this sort of very professional production line type sewing where it's I'm on the clock. This is not glitzy. This is about getting the job done, getting it done in an efficient manner and just moving on to the next thing. Because when you're doing production sewing, it's all piecework. And yeah. So everything does have, there is that kind of very low tech, like kind of, it doesn't take a lot of gear. It doesn't, like, in most industrial sewing machines go front and back. That's all they do. Right. I mean, the fancy ones go back. They have backstitch. Mine has a backstitch. And it's like, woo, exciting. So it's like, they don't have any specialty stitches. They don't have zigzag. They don't have any of that. And as a professional seamstress, you have to learn how to navigate that world and use this very, very small toolkit, essentially. And so, but it's kind of cool because it opens up the doors to like, okay, how simple can I do this? Like my Instagram feed is full of like those amazing seamstresses from South America. I just love them, who are like doing the simplest stuff on their industrial machines. Oh, I can't get enough of it. I'm like, oh yeah, show me how to turn that corner. Show me how to sew that zipper. I'm like, yes, because I understand that world. Like that's the world I was trained in.
Right.
And I think that there's a real need for that, for us to kind of pass on that knowledge to people. Because again, you have the people who love to do the stitching and that's what's really their jam. I'm definitely one of those people. But you also, and then you have people who really, really love to get into that fussy, fine finishing work. I am not one of those people. And so I've learned that actually I have a tribe out there. Like there are people out there who are like, okay, show me how to not do it in a not fussy manner. And right. It's great. Like the people who do the fussy finishing, it's beautiful and amazing. And I'm always blown away by it. But I think there's a space for really having this very sort of low tech kind of finishing, classic way of doing things, the way things are done, like in Greece or something, the lined bag technique. I learned that in Greece. I had never seen that before. This idea of like taking a piece of fabric, popping another fabric piece on it, stitching around it, turning inside out, and then just sewing the sides. And I'm like, when I first saw that in Greece, I'm like, that is brilliant. It's like this brilliant technique. And so that's how I've made my own line bags. Like, and it actually creates this cool, like little side. It creates like this, almost like it looks a little bit like a French seam or something on the outside. It's this really cool little technique and you get like a fully lined bag, but it's way less fussy than any other line bag technique I've ever seen. So yeah.
Absolutely. And it's nice to have those bags because, and to do your stitching and to have your stitching on a bag and then you can carry your stuff around.
So many bags. I know. I was so glad that they let me put two in the book because I was like, the bags, we have to do the bags. And then did you guys see too that I did a special one for the EGA? The EGA, there's an EGA, let's see if I get this right. No. The EGA had me take one of the designs from the design library. This is actually a centered band design. And I adapted it for this bag and we did it for the EGA. It's to EGA members. It's a tutorial blog and the chart is free. But if you have the book, then all you got to do is go to the free tutorial blog and you can see how I did this.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, yeah, the bags are super useful. Boy, they're great. Like come the holidays or like if you want to make just like a little kind of special gift for somebody, like we use bags a lot, you know, use them when you travel and you use them like when you're, you know, I sometimes will like head to a coffee shop if I'm like trying to work on a design or something. You know, I throw all my pencils and my gear in one of my little bags and like out I go. So yeah, they're really great.
Yeah, your whole bag thing is really, they're just so cool. I mean, they look terrific.
You know, yeah.
They look terrific, but you talk about a functional piece of needlework.
So functional. Totally.
Yeah.
Well, and something like these little bags too can take you just like if you're a reasonable stitcher, a couple of nights, and you have this thing that looks like way more than like the time you put into it. You know, like it doesn't have to be this thing you spend a month on. I mean, I regularly spend a month on super complex embroideries, but it is nice to have some things kind of in your own little tool, in your own personal toolkit that you can like whip out a quick gift or like, you know, do something nice like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would submit that when it comes to finishing, a majority of the finishing, if people actually look at it, is really nothing more than the kinds of simple things that you have in the book or related techniques. And in those instances, you really don't need to send it out to have it done by a professional finisher because, you know, and if you have a sewing machine, even more, you're armed even more to do these kinds of things, but you just don't need to. And then you have your pieces done and you can use it. And,
yes. Yeah, and that's the other thing that was really important to me. And we really worked. It was so much fun when I did my first like meeting with the whole team at the publishers. Well, it was kind of funny because I put the book together. I didn't realize that I did not know this. I mean, it's actually my second book, but my first book was actually an academic book. Very boring, very dry. This was my first like craft book. And I didn't realize that actually the way it works in the publishing world is like you present an idea and then they're like, oh yeah, like we like that idea. Let's sign a contract. Now go work on that idea. I was like, here's my entire book. And they didn't know what to do with me at first. The gal was like, we want it. But Krista, wait, we're not ready for the whole book. Like she like had to send me a thing, an email basically saying, this is the schedule. We want this text at this time and this at another time. And I'm like, okay, fine. But it's all ready to go. Like we're good to go. And it was so funny because they were like, well, wait. And I'm like, no, we're like ready. Why would not have like reached out until I had the book ready to go? So I had everything, the Word doc, I had the samples done. Like we were just wrapping up all the samples because I thought, well, somebody's going to probably want this book at some point. And I used my connections through the Craft Industry Alliance and Abby Glassenberg, who's the co-founder and direct and current president. She actually was like, oh, I've got 5 presses to recommend to you. And David and Charles was second on the list. And it was interesting. Search Press was first. And I sent an email and it turns out she had an issue with her email and never got my email. Which was really funny. It was like a whole glitch in the system and she never got my email. And I thought she was just like, you know, didn't want the book and didn't want to respond. But it turns out no, she actually was really interested in the book, but never got the email. And so David and Charles picked it up, but they got back to me within like, it was like 2 days from sending the book proposal. And someone did give me the advice, and this was very helpful. Another person who's done craft books said, you have to send out a beautiful book proposal. And I would not have realized that you needed to do that. So my graphic designer, Kristen, and I worked together to create this like 7-page gorgeous like book proposal with like suggested projects and like what we were looking to do and everything. And I'm pretty convinced that book proposal was a big part of why David and Charles picked me up. But then we had this like meeting. So we have this meeting with the graphic team and I don't know how this works in the craft industry. And I'm like, okay, so like, what do you guys want to do? I'm like, okay, you guys publish books. So like, clearly you guys know what you're doing. I looked at their books are nice looking. I'm like, I just really, really want my book to be beautiful. That's like really all that matters to me is like, I want it to be like beautiful. And they're like, okay. And then they're like, let's talk to Anna. And Anna, the graphic designer, comes up and she's like, Krista, I've created a vision board for you. And literally she pulls this like elaborate vision board onto the Zoom screen. And I'm like, oh my God, Anna, it's like you're looking in my brain. It is a little creepy and also very exciting because she had like gone to the website, reviewed every photo, all my social. She had props that, I mean, I just love the props she chose. She's like, we're going to rent a 1920s house here in London to take the shots. I'm like, whoa, I'm feeling stalked. It was awesome. So anyways, it was a really funny process. I hadn't realized how much creative freedom I had as an author. And that was actually a really fun part of it is that like every step they were like, well, how do you feel about this? Or how do you feel about this? Or how do you feel about this? And I was like, wow, I like get to actually weigh in on that. Like, I kind of thought you guys were the experts. And they're like, no, we really want this to be the book that you want it to be. And so the process was fantastic. And then when we got to the editing, we did all the like really hard technical editing of all the operations notes and instructions. Like, I want to say it was like February. And man, their editor is fantastic and grueling. That woman doesn't miss a punctuation mark. If anybody can find an error in that section.
I was going to applaud their editor because.
Cheryl, let's all give a shout out to Cheryl. Because seriously, I mean, she was, and I actually felt like it so improved the book because she standardized absolutely everything. Yep. And she really had held my feet to the fire. And like, I discovered 2 measurement errors I'd made in some things I had submitted. And I felt like it made it such a stronger book for going through that really, really rigorous process. Yeah, it was great.
Being that that's what I've done for 45 years, it's a disease. And when I can't read anything without editing it. I just can't. That ability went away a long time ago. And I went through that thing, and that is clean. She really did a job.
I know, right? Yep. She did an amazing Excellent. Job. Yep. And I have to say, by the third week, I was like, oh, my word. Is it another email from Cheryl? I'm like, seriously? Can't we, like, just let one thing go? Nope, nothing's going on Cheryl's watch. And, you know, afterwards, I'm like, okay, no, this is really good. This is really good for the book. And there was a moment where I was like, Cheryl, let it go. Yeah. But no, Cheryl you has can't. Got a commitment you to can't. Perfection. And you, she's right. She's totally right.
Yeah. No, you can't let it go. And then the end result is what you have. And
yeah,
so
exactly.
in over the course of time, that little segment where you just wanted to throw things, it's worth it because when the book comes out and you go through it, you're not going, oh, no, this. Or,
exactly.
or you're not handing the book to someone and say, hey, look at my book. I'm really proud of it, but this or but that.
Exactly.
And that's the worst. And but it's all that tedious work, and a good editor makes that happen. And yeah, she did a bang up job. Yeah,
oh,
really good.
She was amazing. Yeah, and it was funny. I felt like actually working with the entire team, the people that I worked with. It was very much a team effort. I thought, okay, I bring the creativity and the text and the charts and all the things, but boy, it just was so great too, because like, okay, when I'm doing Avlia patterns, it's my eyes and my eyes only on something. And then of course my graphic designer, Kristen, and like, but she doesn't do editing. She does like all the graphic stuff, but it was so good for me as a designer. I felt like I really grew through this process by having other people critique my work. And it was very like constructive criticism. And it's definitely made me stronger as a designer, because I'm like, oh, okay, like I need to kind of think through that, or I need to think through this. And so I have to say the process was, I mean, really, really good for that. For me, I feel like it's actually not just good for the book. It's like affecting all of my work now moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you take a lot more out of it than you realize. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So true.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and then the only thing they got wrong in the book, which is kind of funny, and it's very funny because I got two very what should we say, people really feeling their feels on this one. So the trend in publishing now is that for a signed copy, they ask you to, they send you all of these like little pre-printed little book plates that are printed with the publisher's name and like this nice little border. And then they ask you to write your message and your name on the inside. And so you prepare those, and then those get stuck in every book. And I've actually personally stuck those in every single book. Well, so I printed those up, and I had a woman who, actually two different people who got very frustrated because they thought those had been computer generated, because my signature did not match. And I was like, what is she talking about? And I went to the introduction and realized that the publisher, poor people, they had totally forgotten to get my actual signature on my name, Krista, in the introduction.
Oh.
And they had clearly put a mock-up in of my signature. And so this woman thought she was getting a computer-generated, like, signed book. And I'm like, no, I actually signed every single one of those book plates. And my handwriting is so good that, like, she didn't believe, like, they didn't believe me at first. So I had to do an Instagram reel showing me signing all the book plates. So it was really funny. And honestly, if that's the one mistake, I'll take it.
Yeah, I saw that, and I didn't quite piece it all together. So the fake one is what's in the book then.
Yep. And my real signature was the one there. And I finally, like, just this week, I was like, my husband was like, you should have used a blue pen. I'm like, oh, duh. So I got blue pens, and now I'm signing all of them in blue, so you can tell it's definitely not. But there's nothing computer generated about that. I actually signed every single one of them. Yeah.
Oh.
It was funny.
That's hilarious. Great. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, okay.
That is
and then,
great.
Then we get to the part of the book that, to me, it just absolutely sets it apart, and that's the planning section and the and the library. This is where this book goes from this level to this level, because now it's there's so much in there, because you know we've talked Beth and I have several times, but all four of us have talked many times about, you know, the importance, at least in my view, the importance of owning a sampler, an alphabet sampler, because you don't stitch it. I mean, I hate stitching alphabets, and some people love it, but I don't. But you own those charts so that you have all kinds of letters in all different shapes, sizes, scrolls, whatever, and it becomes a tool.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then so to me, it's worth it to own a couple of those. But then this book comes along, and now your library is all of these borders and all of these designs. And I'm going through that thing, and I know Beth was doing the same thing. You're just looking at all of the projects you can create out of this that have nothing to do with the ones that you put in the front half of the book. All of things you can create, or designs you're stitching that now you can put a border on that you like.
Exactly.
And so now this book to me becomes this tool.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, I've got a brain, and it just came to me. I was like, my kids are all, they're in all these little weddings. And I keep on thinking, if you were a stitcher, and you know, wedding gifts can be really expensive, but I'm working on your, one of your cover, your pieces.
Yeah, the pasta basket cover. Yeah.
So I keep on thinking, well, you take one of those, take the initials, kind of make a quick little monogram, and then take one of your borders and make them a little bread.
Oh my gosh, a basket cloth. That's a great idea. Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I have two basket cloth kits that are just like little simple borders like that on the Avlia website. And they're some of our top sellers, which really surprised me. Like for me as a stitcher, I'm like, I think I'd go after something more complex, but people like it because it's like 5,000-6,000 stitches. You can do it in a week or two, and then you can give it as a gift. So yeah. And that was something I was thinking about with the small borders is all those little projects. You could do a little drawstring bag with like just a little tiny border along one corner, like one edge. Yep. Or, you know, and we see all those borders, like those kind of, especially in the small border section in the back, there's lots of those borders that we've seen lots of other places, but I kind of wanted to gather them like together because they're good finishers. Like, I don't mean in terms of finishing, like sewing a wall hanging or a cushion or something, but I mean, they finish and complete a design. They like act almost like as little mini frames, you know, on a design. Yep. So you can take something that's like you said, a monogram, a little motif, pop one of those small borders around it, and boom, you've got like a finished design.
Right. Right. And that's a great idea with the bags, you know, like wedding showers, those sort of things where you give them like a little thing from the kitchen tool and you put it in that bag and it gives them the whole, it's wrapped. There you go. Here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
With their initials. That'd be great.
Exactly. Travel bags. You know, for little travel bags, like I always like, you know, something like that, that has your little initials on it or something would be so nice for like when you travel. Like for me, like I always have my embroidery in one little bag and I have like, you know, all my other stuff in another little bag and I keep one for my lingerie and different things like that. Like, okay, you can get the little, you know, the luggage, the little ones now that everybody has the little, I'm blanking on what those are called. The little packing cubes, cubes. Yeah. These are like packing cubes with style, you know, style that you could do. And it'd be kind of a neat little like memento gift that you could give. That would be a great bridal shower idea. I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good idea.
Yeah. There's just an endless parade of ideas. And then I started thinking about, you know, the kits you have for embellishing clothing.
Yeah.
This whole library is just full.
Exactly. That was why I wanted to try. That was another reason why I was wanting to get those Folk Flourish kits out and get that technique out there, because I knew the book was on the horizon. Yeah. And I was thinking, as I was working on the charts, I'm like, oh, these would be amazing for the Folk Flourishes. And we have people that are doing that now, and it's great. So some people are like starting to tag us on social media. Oh, I did my shirt, or I did my shorts or my pants or whatever. Yeah. And it's really cool. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. But no, that's where this book for me, just like I said, took on a whole new dimension.
Well, it actually, we cut a bunch of designs. Funny thing. I had more charts, but most of them were big ones. Most of them were like really big. I just love complex anything, especially when it comes to like old historical Greek folk embroidery. Oh, I'm like, give me 50,000 stitches, you know, like I'll take it. But I realize that for the scope of the book, some of these things are going to be too big. So I've been thinking already, I'm like, ooh, if they're all interested in another book, like I'd be very inclined now that I have this one to be able to do a book that's like more complex designs, because that's at the other end of the spectrum are things that I see that are in the like, really big stitching commitments that like might be too big for me to really make. They don't really make a marketable kit at Avlia, although I say that. And then literally one of my top selling designs is right now is a 30,000 stitch kit. And is the Iris's paint box, which I really released for myself. It was totally a passion project. I'm like, I love this table runner and I'm stitching it and like, whatever. I have a feeling it's going to sit, you know, on the website and never sell. And now we sell it all the time. So there is definitely people out there who want the more complex, but I felt like this book is so, I wanted this to have like all the stuff in it as a springboard so that if I am able to do any future books, I can do like more complex, more intricacy, things like that. But here's your basic reference work for finishing and, you know, designing and all that kind of stuff. It's all right here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, you hit it. It's just a terrific book. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you guys like it because it was a little nerve wracking. I was like, okay, I've bought a lot of craft books. I've read a lot of craft books, but I'm like, will people actually like it? Like, and the publisher was like, well, do you want to sell it on your website? I said, yeah, sure. I'll sell it on my website. They're like, yeah, okay, great. We'll get you set up. How many do you want? And I said, well, I think I'll really go out on a limb and I'll get 100 copies. And we put it on pre-order and we sold out that many in the first weekend. And that was 6 weeks ago. And so we're now actually on our third shipment and we've sold over 500 copies. Excellent. So I was stunned by that. That response, I thought we'd buy 100 and we'd sell a few dozen. Yeah. And that's definitely not the case. But I'm excited because I want people to start thinking about folk embroidery as like its own kind of thing in the craft world. You know, there's needlepoint, there's embroidery, there's cross stitch, there's knitting, there's these sorts of things. But I'd really like to kind of open up that embroidery room a bit and kind of be like, hey, there's folk embroidery. It's over here. This is like the different techniques. It is some cross stitch. It's also outlining because some of the things in the book also have outlining and backstitching. And then the new techniques that I'm going to be bringing back from Greece and things like that. I want it to be like more about the breadth of folk embroidery because not all folk embroidery is cross stitch. And so I kind of want to start expanding that category in people's mind that this is more sort of a style and a vibe and an aesthetic. And then we use different stitches to kind of achieve that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Well,
and don't you think folk embroidery too tends to be more, it's usable. You know, I think of like the Hardanger, the Norwegians, they put it on their clothing. It was on their clothing. That's how it was. It wasn't just these little delicate little pillows or things they hung on the wall. It was supposed to be usable.
Well, and some of, so like the wall hanging design, in the book, the Dodecanese ornamental, this is actually a motif that would have been repeated like anywhere from 10 to like 30 times on a curtain that was used to enclose a bedchamber for privacy and warmth. So very, very, very practical. So a lot of these designs, they're always rooted in some sort of practical use. Folk costume. It was interesting. I've been doing kind of a deep dive into folk costume because my upcoming trip to Greece, I'll be visiting 6 cities, specifically to visit folk costume museums in 6 different cities in right around Athens. And so I've been doing a deep dive into folk costumes and like learning about how they prepared their folk costume wardrobes. And that many women, when they got married, they actually had up to 18 outfits like prepared that they would then wear like throughout their life. And so these are very, very practical things. These aren't just like fancy feast day dress up clothes. These are like their work aprons and their different things. So literally, this was the way that people brought like color and life and aesthetics and art and motifs into their daily lives.
Yeah, you hit it. Wow. Yeah. Really,
that would be fascinating to see, hear about that too when you get back. That's going to be fun.
Fun. I'm so excited. I just finalized my whole itinerary. I'm actually getting to study with my embroidery tutor in Athens for 3 days. So that's going to be, I didn't think she could give me that much time, but I caught her before her class schedules, her full round of classes began. And so she's giving me 3 full days. So wow. I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah.
That's going to be great. All right. Now, how many years has it been you've been trying to get to Greece? COVID, your foot?
Oh, it's been okay. My last trip was last September that I had to cancel because of my foot, because I still couldn't walk by last September. And then before that, I can't remember my last trip was.
COVID wrecked one.
That wrecked one. Yeah. So I'm two trips down. Third time's a charm. I'm going. I told my husband, I am getting on that plane. I am knocking down anybody in my path. I am not going to be nice. I am getting on that plane and going to Greece. It's happening this time. Yeah. So I have my plan. Yep. And it all worked out. It all worked out fine. And this trip, we just decided, my teenager is 14, and we just decided, this trip, I just did need to go by myself and just kind of go hardcore research. And then she'll get to go on the next one. So, yeah.
All right. So let's wrap up here. The book is available on your website. And then is it elsewhere?
Totally. Okay. So on the website. Okay. Full disclosure, on the website, it is $29.99. And it is suggested retail of $24.99. So it is technically not free shipping because I have to pay $5.32 media mail to ship it anywhere. So you can buy it on the website if you want to support me and Avlia. Then if you buy it on the website, that's great. But especially for people that live in other countries, I keep telling them, just buy it on Amazon. Don't pay the $30 shipping. This is crazy. You don't, it's fine. And if you really, really, really absolutely need a signed book plate, then email me and I will mail you a signed book plate. But please don't spend that crazy amount of postage. It just makes my wallet hurt to think of you spending the money on the postage. So anyways, but you can also get it on Amazon. So totally on Amazon. And actually anybody that wants to leave a positive review on Amazon, that would be lovely. We could use those reviews. So if you've read it and enjoyed it and you want to leave that review on Amazon, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. You've sold out two shipments. So the third one is on its way and you just keep them coming. So
keep it coming. Right. We should be caught up now. Yeah.
Well, and it's fantastic that you're selling them because I've worked with through the years, a handful of people who have done books, craft hobby type books, and moving books is hard to do.
That's what I thought was going to happen. I thought it was, for me, it was a love project. It was a broken foot project. It was I can get all this stuff in one place. And so I wasn't really expecting to actually sell books, as funny as that is. I mean, don't tell my publisher I said that, but yeah.
No, I worked with one guy on a book and he traveled the country for a year promoting his book. And was finally able to sell enough, and it was an excellent book, and really well done. But he worked like a dog to sell it. So, count your blessings that you're moving books so fast.
Oh, I'm honestly, I've been, Pamela and I have been both working, and we've been divvying up the shipments. And anybody who's just ordering a book, I'm packaging that order and doing the media mail, and she's doing the ones that are adding kits. And I have to say, it has been such a I don't want to cry, but it's been a humbling experience to just see all these names of people, who are buying my book and who are supporting my creativity. Oh my gosh. It's a humbling experience. It's so meaningful to me. It's so humbling. It's oh my gosh, I can't believe my little book is going out to all these different places. So I really, really value that support. That support is, I just wouldn't be able to do what I do without this kind of support. So huge.
But you put together a book that is much more than just projects, and that's the difference.
Right.
So
absolutely.
So talk about kits for these projects that are in here. What are we doing there?
Okay, so basically there is a supply kit for every one. There are 14 essential projects in the book. 13 of them are ones you can make. The 14th is a dress, a child's dress with a little pinafore. That we're not doing a kit for because you can do that yourself. But the other ones, what it is for example, on the Noxos Stars, the mitered cushion, it comes with the linen to stitch on and the Essex Bordeaux. So basically all the same fabrics that I sourced and used for the project in the book. If you want it to look exactly identical to what's in the book, we're selling the add-on supply kits. And the supply kits do not come with charts. Because the publisher won't allow us, because of copyright issues, we can't photocopy the chart and put that in. You have to buy the book, but then you can add on the supply kit. So if you want to make Brindisi Diamonds table mat, or if you want to make the Cerulean Squares table square, you can buy all the same DMC floss and fabric that I used, or that the sample stitchers and I used to make the samples. And so that's just like an ease of use thing. But I will say, like, we sell 30 count counted linen, but that's widely available anywhere. The only fabrics that are not available anywhere else in the United States are the traditional ground cloth and the mikini. And that's because I import those specially from Greece. But, you know, find counted linen, support your local needlework shop too. So, yeah. You know, most all the linen I call for in the book, with one exception, is 30 count linen.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So yeah. Then people can get a kit along with the book, or obviously order the kit. You know, I get the book. I want this kit. So order it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But also the book is great, as you already said, is great as a stash buster. Like, you could be making all, you've got little long, okay, those long skinny strips of linen that you have, like counted thread linen from different projects. Mm-hmm. Ooh, baby. Those are great for the little drawstring bags. Cause these are only four and a half inches wide. So I would definitely encourage people use the book as a stash buster, like make some little tiny projects, you know, with what you've got in your stash. Yeah.
But if you like your linen, like I've got this, I can't remember what this one is called, but anyway, this is your brown fabric, and I love how it feels when you wash it. So it for me, I'm thinking, you know, maybe I need to get a piece of that fabric so I can make some bread covers that, so it washes nice. This feels so nice.
The texture of the traditional ground cloth, it is a machine reproduction of the kind of fabric they used in traditional folk costumes, like in aprons and skirts and things like that. It has a very unique hand because it actually slightly folds or felts after you stitch it. Not nearly as much as like wool, but it does get this like very specific texture. It's delightful to stitch on. It's 26 count, but it ends up looking more like 28 count after you've washed it. And that, I would definitely say if you want to play around with it, go grab one of our scrap bags. We do these little like $14 scrap bags on the website, which are just a bunch of different little scraps because that fabric is expensive to import, we do not waste a scrap of it. Like, it literally every piece goes into a scrap bag or onto a needle card.
No, Beth, you got to wait till after the show, Beth. Wait till after the show, Beth. Yeah, just wait. Wait till we're finished.
So you can get the traditional ground cloth by the yard and like the quarter yard and all that, fat quarters, all the stuff at the website too.
And people who are just listening, it is slightly felted, but the feeling on it is so nice. And that's what, soft. You know, I just love how it feels in my hand because, you know, tactile texture people. So, you know, you want to do one of these projects, you want to take some of the borders and make something for yourself that you're going to actually use and wash.
Yes.
I think that would be fantastic.
It's less expensive than counted linen. It washes better. It's extremely durable. I have cushion covers that are going on almost 20 years now that I made out of it that my kids and dogs like slobber on and lay on and all the things. And I routinely throw this in the wash. It's designed for household usage. It's designed to be durable. So it's a great choice, especially, and it looks like, whereas if you linen is great. If people really love their linen, linen's fantastic. But if you want that kind of textury feel where you can take a little tiny border and make it look like a lot more than it actually is, the traditional ground cloth is fantastic for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say I'm working on the Sea of Light border, and I mean,
isn't that a fun one?
Oh yeah. For me,
I love that design.
Yeah. For me, 40 count linen. So when I picked up this traditional ground cloth, I thought, I'm just not going to like this. And 180 degrees. Yeah. It's
right.
It's
I know. That's when I first saw it in Greece. I'm like, what? And I looked at the count. I'm like, oh, this can't really work up and do anything nice. Like I was so dismissive. And then I started stitching it. Like that night I bought a little bit. I'm like, well, I'll just try it out. And I was like, I was hooked. You have to like kind of try it. It's definitely like a tactile thing. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, it works great. Yeah. It's nice.
And then when you wash it, that's what amazed me, because it kind of like fluffed everything up, and then I don't know,
did you get the little chevron, like it almost gets a little tiny bit of like almost like a little herringbone weave to it when it's washed. That's actually considered very desirable in Greece. Like that's like a feature of it.
Nice.
All right, Everyday Folk is the book. Krista West, avliaembroidery.com. Get yourself a copy. You'll be glad you have it. You just need to have a copy. It's just that simple. Krista, thanks again. Always so much fun to talk with you. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Yeah, thank you.